The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet.
This episode of the Steve Austin Show is sponsored in part by BetOnline.ag. Are you looking for a place to make your online wagers this football season? Then head to BetOnline.ag to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Use promo code PODCAST1 to receive a 50% sign-up bonus today. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I am coming to you from the mean streets of Los Angeles, California today. I'm sitting here at 317 Gimmick Street, and I'm about to open up a can of audio whoop ass with PCO, probably one of the hottest properties, if not the hottest property on the independent wrestling scene today, where he has totally reinvented himself and found a gimmick that truly fits him. And man, I had a good time talking with this grizzled veteran of the squared circle for over 30 years. The two of us sat here across from this damn table in a respectful fashion and talked for 2 hours, 2 hours plus. So this is going to be a two-part podcast. You're hearing part one today, and you're going to hear about some language difficulties and him growing up, all stuff that I went through going back and forth across that border on the second part of the podcast next Thursday. But as I sit here, you know, last Tuesday, as I had Maxwell Jacob Friedman on the show, those guys came back to back. So MJF came over, we talked, and we kind of, whatever happened, happened. And it wasn't good, let's just say that. And then PCO came over the next day, and I had a blast. This is the first time being back in the studio and rolling sound and getting in front of the mic since MJF disrespected me. You know, that was actually the family-friendly show, and I tried to kind of keep everything under control after the situation happened because it was a family-friendly show. I understand my producer probably had to flip a few words, bleep a few words, because I might have went off on a little bit of a tirade. When that sorry sumbitch pissed me off and proceeded to throw water in my face and call me cue ball, among other things. I don't know what all the microphones picked up because I don't listen to my own show. I just record them and turn them in. So, yeah, I guess there's a little bit of heat between myself and MJF. And like I said, I done took away his Los Angeles privileges. He will not be coming back into Los Angeles until I say he can, and that's the bottom line. I want to say this about him. Even though we have heat, I got to give the kid credit at this level. He's doing really good work in the ring. I like what he's doing. I actually like his personality. I like the fact that he's so arrogant and cocky and confident, because you have to be confident to get into the business of professional wrestling, and he seems to have an overabundance of confidence. He disrespected me, and I got to put that away. I'm having a hard time getting over that, because you don't disrespect a global icon and a national treasure after spending so many years traveling down the road, being in as many squared circles as I have been, and so many events, headlining big-time main events, to get disrespected by this young up-and-comer with a truckload of talent. So to kind of, I'm not going to say bury the hatchet, but I want to say one good thing about Maxwell Jacob Friedman. You know, as much as he talks about himself, as much as he believes himself, this kid is actually so humble. One of the biggest things that he did not mention, out of all the things that he did mention on the show, because he certainly has a gift for gab. He's no stranger to stringing a bunch of words together in a sentence, a bunch of sentences to paragraphs, a bunch of paragraphs into complete monologues, promos. He likes to talk, but one of the things he didn't talk about, just to go back to him always saying how humble he is and his humility, I've got to back that up and say that that is a shoot, because Maxwell Jacob Friedman is the only guest I've ever had come over to 317 Gimmick Street where I record, and he Ubered up in a Rolls Royce, and he didn't talk about that on the podcast. Not one single time did he bring it up. And I wasn't going to bring it up because, you know, I could tell just by sitting with him how humble, reserved, and just what kind of human being he actually is. So the fact that he Ubered over here in a Rolls Royce and didn't say anything about it to make anybody feel bad or lesser of themselves, that just goes to show the humility and humble nature of Maxwell Jacob Friedman. And like I said, once again, we didn't leave on good terms. There's still heat between us. I'll see him down the road, as I say to everybody, because, you know, what comes around goes around. And life is a circle. And so, you know, it's a small world. And I'm sure Maxwell Jacob Friedman and myself will cross paths once again, and we will see what happens when that time comes. But anyway, enough of all that bullshit and all the sentimental sappy shit. I got a hell of a podcast for you today. Man, PCO came over, like I said at the beginning of the podcast. Man, this guy is a grizzled veteran. Broke in 1987 and wrestled under a million names. Had several different incarnations of different gimmicks, and none of them ever really felt right to him. Seems to me, or seems to him, that the timing was never right for any of those things to happen. But as he reinvented himself as PCO, this Frankenstein-type creature created by his creator, D. Destro, and super, you know, charged up via electricity, man, this guy has exploded. All these years after 1987, dude's 50 years old and is probably, you know, one of the hottest properties out there and is absolutely crushing it. And as you will hear in the podcast, he basically has transformed himself into Frankenstein. Hell, he looks like Frankenstein when you're sitting across the table from him. And I mean that in a good way. I mean, dude is rugged. He's physical. But his haircut, I mean, his facial features, the resemblance is very eerie. And it's kind of neat. But I had a blast talking with this guy, French-Canadian, talk about going back and forth across the border, all that stuff. And I figured after I did all my research on PCO, I watched matches and stuff and reading about him and so many great interviews that people have done in-depth questions about him. I said, hey, man, it's going to be two fucking veterans sitting across the table shooting the shit about the damn wrestling business. And that's what it is, because I dare say that, yeah, he's a performer, but this motherfucker's a pro wrestler. So I hope you enjoy this conversation. Once again, it strings out over two parts, so you'll hear about an hour of the conversation that we had just the other day when he came through Los Angeles to participate in the Battle of Los Angeles. Due to the nature of podcasts, sometimes when you record, time goes by, events happen, and so things get out of order. But he was in town for the Battle of Los Angeles. The podcast is just now playing today or whenever you download it. So that's already happened. But that's what brought him through town. He's busy as hell. He's very happy. He's very focused. And he's on fire. And, man, I'm really, really happy for the guy to see someone reinvent themselves after all this time, you know, as all the incarnations I went through. It was a 7.5-year process before I found what worked for me. And it was all this time and all of these different steps that he went through to finally find the thing that really fits well and works for him. So, man, just a testament to never give up. Just keep trying to find what works for you. Keep tweaking things. Don't be afraid to change things and go out on a limb. And in 2018, to go out on a limb and kind of recreate Frankenstein, pretty badass. You know, not anybody would have thought of that. And he's always been a damn good athlete. He's always been able to do all those, you know, crazy maneuvers that he does. I don't mean crazy in a sense. I mean, man, when you're doing moonsaults and all the stuff, dude's a hell of an athlete. And he's a big dude. Big dude. So just you can follow him on Twitter. We'll drop his Twitter information. You can find him on YouTube. Some of the videos that they made for PCO with his creator, D. Destro, who's actually a former strongman. Man, those things are gold. So you can just get on YouTube and just type in PCO and D. Destro and check some of that shit out, and just get on his Twitter account and check out all those videos they keep making. But they're churning out cool content, backing up the character, throwing gasoline on the fire to keep him hot. His work on the independent scene has been phenomenal. I love the match he had with Walter at Joey Janela's Spring Break in WrestleMania 34. And we talk about that match actually, and you know what spurred that and how the stars aligned for that match to happen. But anyway, hell, I'm gonna shut the fuck up. We're going to play myself and PCO, but before I get to PCO, listen up. The sports betting scene is currently hotter than it's ever been. And the best part is that our friends at BetOnline have partnered with us here at Podcast One Sportsnet to get you in on the action. You heard directly from Dave Mason at BetOnline right here on this show. These are our go-to guys who we trust for all things betting, lines, odds, wagers, inside info, you name it. And with the college football season in full swing, I think it's high time we got in on the action. Hit me up on Twitter with whom you're picking and this week's games. Here are a few games that I will be tracking. University of Georgia versus Missouri. Georgia has a chance to win a national championship. Will Missouri knock them off? Alabama versus Texas A&M. Man, the Aggies, where my nephew and my niece are going into Roll Tide territory. Alabama, you must win. And Tulane versus Ohio State. Urban Meyer back reinstated from a 3-game suspension. So we'll see how that goes for Tulane. Hopefully they're firing on all cylinders. They don't seem to have missed anything. Use the hashtag StoneColdBet, and we'll pick one of you folks as the winner of a $50 credit for BetOnline.ag live here on the podcast. But first, you got to sign up. Head over to BetOnline.ag and use promo code PODCAST1. That's PODCAST and the number 1 to receive a 50% sign-up bonus today. One more time, BetOnline.ag. And use promo code PODCAST1 to start winning with your online sportsbook experts.
Hey, this is Jordan Harbinger. I used to host the Art of Charm podcast, but now it's time for something new. The Jordan Harbinger Show. Did you know you can be entertained and actually get a boost in your life at the same time? On this show, we dig into the superpowers of the world's most interesting thinkers and top talents. Then we deliver them to you right into your ears. But I get it. We're not all superheroes. That's why we give you their blueprint so you can live what you listen. After 1,000 interviews, learning 5 languages, and getting arrested in a country that doesn't even exist anymore, I'm now more ready than ever to introduce you to The Jordan Harbinger Show. Listen free to The Jordan Harbinger Show, available on Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and the Podcast One app.
This is The Steve Austin Show.
Man, I'm rolling sound here at 317 Gimmick Street. PCO just rolled into town. Shit, man, it's good to see you.
Yeah, man. It's been a while.
Two grizzled-ass, tough-ass veterans of the business of professional wrestling. Because it ain't sports entertainment to me, PCO. It's pro wrestling.
It is.
How you feeling?
I'm feeling great, actually. Like, my body's awesome. I don't have any, like, bruised or bad hip or anything, you know, like. Everybody knows, like, I'm a little bit like a crash dummy. You know, I use my body as a weapon. That's my style of wrestling. And touching wood, you know, it's been a hell of a ride in 2018, and I'm feeling better than ever. Every day, it feels like every day I'm getting stronger and better, and everything's getting on glue.
Man, you broke in 87, right?
Yeah.
I broke in at the back end of 89. 90 was really my first year. You're 3 years younger than me. You just hit 50. You'll be 51 in December. I'll be 54 in December. So you've been at this a long time, dude. People always ask me because I got dropped on my head, damn near paralyzed. And I came back from that after a little bit, and I had to get fused up. And then I had to get out of business at 38 years of age. And people just think I'm beat to shreds. And, you know, like, this arm doesn't straighten up all the way. My right arm doesn't straighten up all the way. My ACL and PCL got replaced a few years ago. I don't have a PCL in my right knee. My complete rebuild of rotator cuff in the left shoulder and right shoulder, C3-4 fusion, the tricep reattachment, a couple hundred stitches, some broke fingers, and shit like that. But, man, when I wake up every single day on a 1 to 10, man, I feel like as far as a pain level, I'm really not in any pain. I feel pretty damn good. Now, sometimes if I'm standing on concrete all day long, my knees will start aching. But, man, for all the beatings that I got put through, I feel pretty decent. Man, just like you were just saying, man, I mean, you always had a very physical style from the get-go. And, like, all the stuff you're doing, you've reinvented yourself. And I want to get to that in a minute. But yeah. Just as we speak right now, you got out of a cab, and I carried one of your bags in here to my house. Carried a motherfucker's bag. I'm trying to get a push.
I got to write down on my diary, Stone Cold Steve Austin carried one of my bags.
Dude, how are you feeling, man, for a shoot? Every morning when you get up, what's your process? Because I used to have to drink 2 pots of coffee, and I'd eat 2 Vicodins. And all my buddies that had pain pill problems or whatever, I wasn't one of them. I was a heavy drinker, but my deal was 2 pots of coffee, a couple Vicks, and down the road I went. I'm not asking about pain pills. I'm asking you where your level of physicality is. I know you train like a motherfucker still.
Yeah.
How are you?
The main thing
shoot
for me,
with me.
Yeah, the main thing for me was to the conditioning was the main thing. You know, it was not so much about the strength or anything like that. Conditioning was the main thing because wrestling has evolved so much that it went from one move that used to be the big move. Now it's a setup move. And then you roll a guy, you give him a knee trigger. It's a combo, you know, it's combination, you know, like what could be a finish before is just a setup for another move. And that other move just becomes a setup for the finisher. So the business has evolved so much. So I felt like to be able to combine 4, 5, 6 moves, 3 moves, all at once, and to get that speed and to get that level of energy, I needed to really work on conditioning. This is the main thing. The strength is always there, but it's gonna sound funny to you, but my take on that was, I can't drink no more. I can't party no more. I can't chase girls no more. Now, if I want to make something good out of it, I got to totally be focused on wrestling. I have no wife. I have no girlfriend. I have a 9-year-old daughter. I'm separated. I'm giving her as much time as I can during my days off. But everything is focused on, you know, having a coach for gymnastic. And my take on that is if you're working 4 days a week, it's hard to improve your game because you cannot work on different or new stuff, you know, with a coach, in the gym, you know, with a gymnastic coach or drilling things in a ring because you're working every night. You get back home, you got 3 days off and, you know, life, pay bills, roof is, done to change, cut the grass or have someone to do it and, you know, life, you know, so it's hard to catch up on life when you're doing wrestling full time.
But you're in zero pain.
Zero pain, not man. And most of the time at every show, I'm crossing like the younger guys and they always look at me, how are you feeling, man? And I'm telling them, feeling great. And I don't know if they think if I'm working them or if I'm honest.
Yeah.
But seriously, why would I lie about that? You know, because I wouldn't be able to do it like 3-4 times a week, week after week after week after week if I was in pain. So, in total honesty, I'm feeling great.
I mean, that's awesome to hear because it's every time when I'll get together with some of the guys and I'll get a chance to see guys that are like a half generation or a full 10 years ahead of me or as far as, you know, and how old they are, like guys 60, 65, 70, whatever. I always ask them, say, hey, man, how you feeling? Because it's kind of like an indicator of how I might be feeling when I get there. Because I know, like I said, I still feel good. I don't have all the energy that I used to have. Of course, you know, when I was on the road 24/7, 365 and just crushing it and loving it. But hell, I can't complain about anything yet. But when you see a lot of guys, it's kind of like when you see the old NFL football players and they'll all gather up for something. Dude, all of them are just like kind of mangled. You've seen all the boys in the
I've seen a lot that have turned into like, you know, like really having problems to walk or to turn their neck or, you know, and things like that. And I don't know if that's going to affect my life in the future by doing what I'm doing now at 50. But that's the chance I'm willing to take because I always took like the big front flip from the top rope to the cement floor, from the apron to the cement floor, the dive over the top rope to the cement floor, in all humility. Now, not that I thought I was better than anybody else. Like Mankind was one of those guys, but he's also feeling the pain now, which I don't yet, but I always thought that I could do things like that, you know?
Here's a question just popped into my head because I was watching so many of your matches and your highlight reels before you came over. So you were, I can't forget which league you were wrestling in, but I guess it was two guys you were working with and you took care of them, you threw them outside, and then you got up and you did a moonsault on both of them, and then you threw them both back in and did like a cannonball or whatever you call it on them. I'm just asking you. Or even going back to the Walter match. And Walter's a big dude, and I want to ask you about him as well. But Dude, when you're a big motherfucker, yeah. What do you weigh?
260.
Okay, 260. Man, just on video, I thought maybe you're close to 3.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, no, whatever, 260 is a shit pile of weight. So when you say, hey, man, yeah, I'm going to hit you with this moonsault, like if you was to tell me that, I was like, you know, PCO, let's save that for WrestleMania 36.
I know.
You know? What do people say when, because I know you want to do your shit. I mean, yeah. And people, you're thriving on that. People are clamoring to see this new resurrection of PCO, the whole Frankenstein thing. So what's, does everybody want to take it because they want to be a part of it? Or does like it scare the shit out of people because you're a big dude coming down with gravity and force?
The thing with Walter, he says, man, I'm not comfortable with it. He said, you're an heavy dude.
Does he speak good English?
Yeah, very okay. Good. He's perfectly bilingual, yeah. Like he's good. And he says, and I worked with him when he was 18 in Germany, So I kind of knew him a little bit. He goes, maybe you should do it from the second rope. I said, no, man, this is my WrestleMania match for me. I mean, you're working like since a few years full time, and you got your name there. This is my WrestleMania match, so. If you catch me, you catch me. If you don't catch me, don't worry about it. I'll hit the ground. So that was my thought going into it. And I had another referee in front of him to make sure, you know, at least if Walter missed me, the small referee would cut at least my hands or cut the just a little bit like the downfall just a bit, you know. Sometimes it doesn't take much to cut it and make it like less painful when you hit the ground. So, but both were like not at the right place at the right time, but I don't blame them because they weren't comfortable doing it. Even the referee was so small, he looked at me, yeah, I'll be there. And funny story on that.
Yeah, funny last words, I'll be there. Where were you, motherfucker?
Last week, I'm doing the championship match for GCW in a regular match, and the title's on the line. And it's a four-way match. And I'm going, okay, I'm going to hit the moonsault from the top. So everybody's like, don't worry, man, we'll be there for you. And every time I hear that, there's something that tells me they might not be there.
Right.
And nobody was there.
Man, when I was wrestling Undertaker in Madison Square Garden, it was SummerSlam. And there was going to be a spot where he was going to have me laid out on the announce table. He was going to get on the top turnbuckle and drop that leg on me. He used to drop that leg. But earlier in the match, he was going for a backdrop. And the spot was I was going to kick him, and he was just going to stand up, straight up, and no-sell it and give me that look, right? Well, problem was, when I kicked him so hard, he brought his head up. And the back of his head caught me right underneath the chin. Up until that point in my life, I'd never been knocked out, ever. All of a sudden, I'm on my back in Madison Square Garden, looking up at the damn ceiling, like, well, where the fuck am I? And Earl Hebner, the referee, looked down at me. He goes, goddamn, boy, you all right? I looked up at Earl. I said, where am I? He goes, goddamn it, boy, you in the garden. So anyway, the match sucked because I don't really I was able to finish.
Yeah,
but I don't remember.
Went through with
what I do remember is when Taker laid me on that table, and then I was thinking, shit, man, we talked about this, but we ain't never tried to rehearse it because it's not something
you
rehearse.
Yeah.
And at that point, I don't think that had ever been done. Certainly devastating things had been done, but I don't think he dropped a leg on an announce table from a top turnbuckle. So I'm laying there, and I'm thinking, shit, man, maybe he's just going to get down and just come get me. All of a sudden, man, he jumped off, and I, you know, dude, you can't move.
No,
you
can't. It's one of those deals that you do it live. You can't practice,
dude.
That.
I mean, this is fucking WrestleMania.
Yeah.
I mean, SummerSlam. It's yeah. Whatever. You've committed.
Yeah.
And that guy trusts you, and you trust him.
Yeah.
So I'm just laying there thinking, fuck, here we go. And it turned out all right.
Yeah, that's cool when it happened. That's the greatest feeling in the world.
Do you ever get up there and you think, God damn, I hope this one goes good? Or I mean, because, dude, anything can happen. Like, people move. People aren't there, as you said.
Yeah.
And then, dude, I was watching some of the things. There weren't even any mats around the ring in a couple of these matches, dude. It wasn't
They don't do that anymore. Like, they don't. They live it out to the cement floor. I mean, just to make it, like, more dangerous or create more drama, like, okay, if he does something, there's no, you know, it's not like Vince where he worries about if one of his talent get injured, he's out of the storyline, so he can't afford that.
Right.
But on the indie, the thing compared to Vince, it's a WrestleMania match every night. Like, if I'm working four times a week on indie show, for me, it's four WrestleMania match because the guy that I'm working against, he's got everything to prove. He wants to shine. He wants to look good. He wants to have a great match. And me, it's like, okay, I did the main event the night before and the second night, and that's my third night. And now I'm going, okay, the guy wants slam me in cement blocks or, you know, do some crazy stuff. And I'm caught in a situation where I have to go for it because I cannot put the brake down, you know. So it's always boom, 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 boom. So it's really taxing. It's really working hard every night. There's no night off.
Dude, you're riding a lightning bolt, but you got to keep riding it. You can't get knocked off. Yeah, not at this point.
No.
Let me ask you about WrestleMania 34 weekend. It was Joey Janela's spring break. You're working with Walter, and this was a breakout match for you. And you knew that, I mean, because you wanted to do that moonsault. You wanted to get all that good stuff in. You set the indie world on fire. It was just like a big-ass B-12 shot in your career, because all of a sudden it's like, hey, man, well, first of all, y'all ripped it up in an awesome match. It wasn't just about the moonsault.
No,
the moonsault was great. The match was so physical, it was just great storytelling.
Yeah, I think everything clicked, and it's one of those moments where I always say, and I'm sure you will understand what I'm thinking here, a promoter always waiting for a guy to pop his territory. As a wrestler, I'm sure you felt like that. You're always thinking, this is my year, I'm going to pop it up, you know, because we have high expectation. We want to be the best at what we do. And sometimes I was caught in a meeting with, you know, John or Vince or any other agent, and who do you think is going to be the next big thing here in WWE? Who's going to be the next Stone Cold? Who's going to be the next Rock? Who's going to be the next, you know? And like, I'm thinking, okay, I don't want to say myself, I'm going to look like, you know, I'm out of my mind, but deep down inside, I wish I could say my name.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't make sense to them, maybe, because they don't have any ideas for me, or they don't have any gimmicks for me, or they don't have any way that they can think it's going to happen. So I'm going along and I'm saying, John, just give me your idea on this. And they came up with like 3-4 names, and it never happened, because you don't know deep down inside how much desire the guy's got, you know, how big he sees himself, you know, what he wants to accomplish, what's his goal really. Like, the inside, I think it's where it all takes form. And I heard you one time saying, you know, most of the people think the belts aren't important in wrestling. Well, goddamn, the belts are the most important thing in wrestling. If you don't want a belt, you're not in the right sport, because it's all about the belt, you know, because it's all about, you know, achieving something and aiming for a goal. It's not just about, yeah, money comes with it, but at first, your passion, when you're young, you're 14, you're 15, you want to accomplish something, you want to change the world, you want to change the wrestling world, you want to innovate, you want to bring something new, you want to be part of something big. And I always felt like I couldn't really say my part, and that's why the Walter match felt like it was the, finally, it popped out my career. Like, I was hoping for maybe 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. Every year I was hoping, I'm going to show them, I'm going to pop it up, you know? And it didn't happen. But the same thing for Vince sometimes, you know, or any other promoter. He targets a guy, he thinks the guy is going to be the guy is not the guy. And I think you're the perfect example. I mean,
I was never supposed to be the guy.
Yeah.
With a couple of fluke circumstances, you know, the hug in Madison Square Garden, all that heat, and then the guys going south, and then King of the Ring. And then my whole shit was a fluke, and I got lucky to hit a grand slam with the promo with Austin 316, and that's the bottom line. But that was never supposed to happen. I was never supposed to be that guy. I got lucky.
And you couldn't predict it.
No,
but
no,
I'm sure no. You envisioned it, though.
Well, you know, I had high hopes of being a top guy, but, you know, until things happen, if they don't happen, and there was no plan for it to happen. So if those guys had never done that stuff in the garden, had Mark Merrill never kicked me in the mouth in that first match, had I never gone to the hospital, and then had Jake not cut that religious promo, had Michael P.S. Hayes as Doc Hendricks not told me about it, I would have never come up with it. So that was all the things that needed to happen, plus much more for that instance to happen. You said pop the territory, man. I ain't heard that shit in a long time.
Yeah, but pop the territory.
Holy shit, man. Popping the territory is like, man, you somebody shoots an angle, whether it's the guy on top, middle, or bottom, and all of a sudden people just say, holy shit, and fucking tickets start flying off and the arenas start getting packed. Popping the territory.
Yeah. And for me, I mean, it's a smaller scale, but the Walter match, I was advertised, you know, fighting Walter. And it's like a little bit like you. And it's a different story, but all difference are different, but they're the same. So the guy from Indiana, Michael Blandon, called me around like December. He says, I got a spot for you on my show in Indiana. So I figure, okay, I'm going to go hit the States. Maybe that's where everything goes right now. Because I always like made it from Europe, you know, from yep. England, Germany, and then Puerto Rico. And then I got signed. And then I'm going to try a different route this time. So I went to Indiana. He says, you can choose January 13 or April 21st for my show. So I said, I knew where I wanted to be for April around WrestleMania. So I said, January 13th. I was not like in the condition that I wanted to be. I was not in shape that I wanted to be, but I said, I have to gamble that. So I took that flight. It was a snowstorm. I stayed for 6 hours in the aircraft. Finally made it to Chicago, drove to Indiana. I had 15 minutes to put my match together. Ethan Page was there as a great worker. We put a hell of a good match together for what we had. You know, it was a great match. Joey Janela was there. Watch my match. And right after my match, he said, man, I want you for my spring break. So imagine all the destiny things that if I'd chosen the 21st of April, I'm missing everything. So I chose the 13th of January. Joey was there, brought me to the spring break, had the match with Walter.
Funny because when Joey Janela was over here doing the show, you know, I was asking about, you know, like, who's hot out there? He goes, oh, man, PCO is the hottest guy out there. I said, PCO? Because I didn't know.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I was like, Jesus Christ, are you kidding me? And then I saw the match, and I was blown away. I got to ask you about the physicality of that match. Dude, you're a big guy. You spend a lot of time in the gym. You're always in shape. How tall and how heavy is this Walter guy?
About 6'4", 300.
Man, he's a hell of a damn worker. And you guys
hands are about that long.
Yeah.
He's got long hands and he's got a big whip too.
So is that why the chops are so physical? Dude, because what I was going to get to, dude.
Because it's like a tennis player. He goes from far out and, you know, he uses all the whip, you know, on it. So that's why it comes crashing that hard with long fingers.
You had a circle in your chest. It was just purple and black.
Yeah.
And you're giving them back, no doubt.
Yeah.
I never was much of a chop guy. You know, Flair's chops never really hurt. When I was in USWA.
Chris would hurt a little bit. Chris Benoit.
Benoit, yeah.
He had good
Danny
chops.
Danny Davis had hard chops.
Yeah.
And then one time I was down in WCW, I was working with Brian Pillman, and he liked to do that overhand chop. We was down there in Florida. The house was about one-third full. And, you know, we were having good matches. We had just split up as the Hollywood Blondes, and Brian's cracking. Man, I'm kind of cheating a little bit. I'm kind of turning my chest a little bit.
Yeah.
Or so Brian, hey, man, to Brian's credit, you know, we went back in the dressing room to, you know, take a shower. And he comes up to me, and he was straight up. He goes, Steve, man. He goes, listen. He goes, if you don't want to take those chops right, just tell me, because they look like shit doing what you're doing. He called me on it. And I said, you're right. So from then on, I took him straight on because fucking Pillman called me on him. Yeah. And I give him credit for calling me on him. But, you know, dude, when you're on the road every goddamn night and just motherfuckers chop me in the chest. I mean, like every – because we're on the road. We're in the ring 25 times a month back
in the day. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
it gets a little much.
It'd be hard to be working like that 25 days in a row. But, like, if someone like Walter works like that, well, this is my style.
Yep.
I'll choose a guy that goes with my style. If he doesn't want to exchange, I'll respect that. But if the guy wants to exchange, I'm more than open to exchange with him.
Yeah.
Because I'm telling, that's my take on it. If you want to give them, you got to be able, be willing to take them too.
Agreed.
You cannot just give it to the others and not receive them. If you want to give them, receive them. So that's why I keep my chest open. I'm going to give it to you. I'll give you my chest.
Right. And by the same token, just to that point, if I was working with a guy that chopped, even though I'm not a chopper, I would go ahead and implement some chops so I could return the favor. I mean, because if I'm going to suffer the wear, I'm going to give some of it back to you, even though it's really not in my repertoire.
Yeah.
That was my school of thought.
Yeah. And if like you're in a position where you say, this is not part of my style, I would respect that too. You know, I'll use forearms. I'll use different things. You know, I'm adapting with everybody that I'm working with. But if I'm working Brody King, Walter, the guy who loves the chops, that's my game too.
Right.
So, I mean, I feel good at doing like whatever it takes.
Question about Walter before we move on. Man, he's a big kid. He's been working for a while. I had never heard of him because I've been insulated, and I haven't been watching a whole lot of indie stuff, and I was always in the territory system until I had to retire, and I was in 03, so I kind of lost touch with a lot of everything. All of a sudden, I see this big kid lighting it up with everybody. I saw him crush it with you. I saw him do a great match with Zack Sabre Jr., with a couple other people.
Yeah, he's
so
great.
Why is he independent? Is he doing more business in Germany, or where is he from? What's the story with this kid?
Well, he's from Austria, but he's really part of the WXW, which is the biggest. It's a great promotion in Germany. Actually, I'm going there in November for the last 2 weeks of November. I'm going back there. I was there in 2008, and I'm going back there, but their territory has grown. Like, it's so... The production of the show, it's almost like close to a WWE show. I mean, it would be not fair to say that, but I mean, you know what I'm saying. It's very professional. Like, they have all the goals coming down the floor. They know how to do things. The production is unbelievable. And they're sold out all the time. Like, most of the show that I'm on, like, coming on, they're, like, 70% sold. And it's, you know, in November. So it's going to be sold out by the time we get there. And I don't think it's because I'm there. I think they're just selling out shows, like, month after month.
Give yourself some credit. I get the humble routine, but hey, man, you know, we all take pride in that. Question. I was talking to Court Bauer. I told him, I said, man, PCO is coming by. And he goes, oh, man, you got to get him to tell you the story about the scar on his chest. And I don't know if it's the same scar, but as I was watching the match with Walter, man, you had this wicked scar on your chest. You pulled your straps down. Was that the same scar?
No.
Or was it a different scar?
Give me the
big scar story first.
Yeah, I'll give you the whole story.
But the one that Court was telling me, he said was pretty wicked. And he wouldn't tell me because he wanted PCO to tell me.
Okay, yeah.
If you don't mind telling the story.
Yeah, for everybody, like a lot of people have been following my vignettes from week to week, from Monday to Monday.
The Frankenstein stuff?
Yeah, the Frankenstein stuff.
Yeah, I want to talk about it.
You know, I'm showing up at MLW, where's Court's the president. You know, he owns MLW. And all the boys, like, especially Colonel Parker, I had him as a manager in WCW when I was there as the amazing French Canadian.
He was my manager, too, one of the funniest guys I've ever known.
And I love Robert. And my scar was just done on the Thursday. On the Tuesday, and I was wrestling on the Thursday. So it was just like 2 days that it was done. So basically, this is the scar.
Jesus.
And the story is my manager, Destro, you know, which is like...
In the videos.
Yeah. He became my my creator, if you want. He's like a dark angel entity, you know, someone that never dies, that never lived, that chooses someone and decide to put, you know, his energy on him and make like the greatest thing in the world with him. So it's like if he created the movie Frankenstein with Mary Shelley, now he's making like full circle by choosing PCO, dig him out of the cemetery, pulling on his shoulders, put the electricity on him, and revived him. And that goes with the resurgence and the resurrection of PCO. Like, yep. All everything is crossing together. And then we were doing something with Black Craft Wrestling, and they had, like, great production team with cameras and everything. And we decided to insert a car battery in my chest. So they cut me off for real. You know, with a knife, like a surgery on my chest. So the blood was coming for real. It was not like a movie. It was a real cut off. And then they split the chest and they insert like the battery, which was like, you know, what it was. When I missed, like, let's say on my match against Matt Riddle, Riddle was just signing with Vince, who was going to NXT. Yep. That was a Friday night. So the day prior, on the Friday, he was signing on the Saturday. He was going to be shown on the Saturday. So on the Friday, we're doing Joey Janela lost in New York. I'm the main event against Riddle. Something happened at the top rope. Boom, I'm knocked out. I'm out. Destro comes in with the car battery, with the jump cables, jumps me. Boom. I start to hulk up. Ah. Riddle comes, chop, 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 no sell, Hulk up, shoot, boom, 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 1, 2, 3. The crowd's electrified. You know, it was crazy. And then with Blackcraft Wrestling, Destro comes to save me with the cable. I'm out because I took a big bump from the top rope to the apron to the cement floor. Shoot me back in the ring. Dickinson shoot me back in the ring. I'm out. Destro comes with the cable. Dickinson took the cable away through it. So it ended up being the double count out, but the crowd was so mad at him. You fucking Dickinson, you fucking ruined the show. Blah, blah, blah. Because they want to see me get the fucking juice.
But
you know?
Isn't it amazing because of where the state of the business is now with everybody watching? If you're watching Monday Night Raw or SmackDown, they're watching the boys and the gals. I mean, everybody together. Yeah. They're watching the boys do their thing in the ring, but they're judging it by the writing. You know, so it's kind of like a double-edged sword. But my point is, people know what the business is.
Yeah.
It's been exposed enough times, but when you have something that you've invested in 100%, like your character, yeah, and Destro, and he's trying to jump you, and he's part of the storyline, and all of a sudden he can't, or he does, and then you hulk up and do the thing, bing, bang, boom, down goes Riddle. I mean, people still want to, yeah, buy in. That's what they paid their money for.
That's what wrestling is all about.
But you present it to them in a good fashion. Don't insult their intelligence. They're paying their money because they're signed up for the ride. So give them that fucking ride.
Yeah,
I love when people buy into that stuff because I'm still a huge pro wrestling fan. And I like the hardcore stuff. I like the serious stuff. My favorite period was kind of like mid-80s, like Mid-South, World Class, you know, NWA. That's that kind of style. And I know that there's a bunch of good stuff in Calgary that I missed. And AWA, I missed them in their prime time. And finally got WWF. I was down there in South Texas. Going back to that scar, who cut you open for a shoot?
That was like a doctor that knew what he was doing.
How did you pay a doctor to say, hey, man, we're shooting this angle, and you're going to cut me open, and we're going to do a battery gimmick? How many stitches did it take to close it up?
We just stapled it.
How many staples?
With the staple, with the gun.
Dude, that the scars.
The stapler gun.
10 inches long.
Yeah, it was about 10 staples from the carpet stapler, and I took them off like the next day, and I just let it heal by itself. No stitches.
So what are you doing while the dude's cutting on you? Just laying there?
Yeah, I'm just like yelling, ah, ah. I'm just sailing. I'm just. But it wasn't that hard
dude,
to do.
Are you crazy?
Yeah, but then Colonel Parker says, "You're so crazy, man. Why? You don't have to do that in the business today." I said, "Listen, Colonel, I'm going to tell you a story here. What's worse? Is it me having like a 10 inches car or a guy who gig all his career long 2 inches, 1 inches, a quarter of inches. His forehead is like a spoon, or someone who started like, let's say Undertaker, started with no tattoos and for the gimmick or because he loves tattoo, whatever, he's ended up with a body full of tattoos.
Yeah.
What's the difference between a scar and having two sleeves of tattoo? To me, it's the same. You know, it looks more crazy because it goes with my storyline. But when Taker started having tattoos, I started thinking, he's the dead man. He's having like all kinds of tattoo. And I started buying into his character because it all made sense. So in my point of view, I mean, it made sense to do that because it was part of my character and it's a souvenir that's going to be there for 2018 for the rest of my life, the greatest year of my life as far as a pro wrestler, because I'm making more money this year than I made in 1993 with Vince, in 1995 with Vince, in 1998, 1999, or in 1996 with WCW.
Man, it's a conversation piece for damn sure. Hey, but I thought Court said that you almost didn't get cleared to wrestle because it was so gruesome. I don't know, was it an athletic commission or what?
Yeah, I don't know. They never said anything to me for the athletic commission in New York.
But you never missed any shots?
No, they came to
how
me.
How long did it take to heal up?
Oh, they never said anything. I mean, every time I was getting chopped, it would start bleeding, and then it took like a month, and after a month, it was like healed up.
All right, let's take a quick pause for the calls and get big ups to True Car. Here's some useful car tips you might not be aware of. Putting your floor mat under your tires in the winter can help get your car out of the snow. Removing excess weight from your car will improve gas mileage. Oh, and if you live in California, put your parking brake on whenever you park, every time. Are you ready for one more tip you might not know about? True Car also helps people get used cars. That's right. True Car ain't just for buying new cars. With a certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience, whether you buy new or used. And with True Car, users can see what others paid, so they know if they're getting a good deal before buying. And they're also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with True Car certified dealers. When you're ready to buy a new or used car, check out True Car and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. You're also going to need some car insurance for that car. Go to GEICO.com, and in 15 minutes, you can be saving 15% or more on car insurance. That's right. Save hundreds of dollars on car insurance at GEICO.com. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today. Well, football season is here, and Podcast One Sportsnet has got you covered when it comes to perfecting your fantasy football skills. Check out the Pro Football Focus podcast and their NFL podcast, where each week they grade every player on every play of the NFL season to give you a look inside the game nobody else can rival. Then get hip to their Forecast podcast, where they give you the best analytics and gambling tips in the football world. Be the envy of your fantasy league and get the hottest tips from PFF's NFL and Forecast podcast every week on Podcast One or wherever you get your favorite podcast. If you love the show, tell your friends and leave a rating and review. Hey, man, you know what's not smart? Job sites that overwhelm you with tons of the wrong resumes. But you know what is smart? ZipRecruiter.com/Steve. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't wait for candidates to find you. ZipRecruiter finds them for you. Its powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes, identifies people with the right skills, education, and experience for your job, and actively invites them to apply. That means you get qualified candidates fast. No more sorting through the wrong resumes. No more waiting for the right candidates to apply. Take, for instance, my producer Sean's friend, the guy that owns a restaurant. This cat is smart. He was able to get fully staffed in one day thanks to ZipRecruiter. It is that quick and that efficient. Right now, only for listeners of the Steve Austin Show, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/Steve. And if you're out there on social media and you're using ZipRecruiter, tag us in a post and let us know. We'll get you a shout out on the podcast. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Steve to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
Hey, man, whose idea was it to come up with the Frankenstein stuff?
That man, was,
Go ahead.
Yeah, it was Destro. Because Destro...
Now, who is Destro to you personally?
Yeah. Destro is a guy that, I was trying to get involved in wrestling about 10, 15 years ago. I thought that was going to be my ticket in. Because he's doing the old strongman feet of strength. He's got the strongest hand in the world. Like, he can do a square in a deck of cards. He can tear two decks of cards. He can bend nails. He can, like, do on the grippers 300 pounds with... seriously, I don't think Brock could do that. Seriously, it's just the power of the hands and all the small ligaments and tendons and every fingers and all the hands. So that's his strength. And when he arm wrestles with guys 20 years old, he's classified for the world championship arm wrestling. He's 132 pounds. He used to be 300 pounds. He lost 168 pounds. That's why I think he's a guru as far as nutrition and conditioning. He knows, you know, what I need for what I do, and he knows what he needs for what he does. At first, I met him. He had two kids. He had his wife. He had things to do. He was not interested, and he was big. Now he's so small, he kept all his strength. He's still curls 220. And the way I build him is like mind over matters. I mean, it's like he's bending nails with his mind. Because the Shaolin monks, they barely don't believe what he can do. They think he bends the nails with his mind and not with his strength. Because it looks like a miracle. And Matt Stryker was there when we did a show at StarCast. We did a live show exhibition. And, you know, I do the big thing. Like, I break the wrench in a half, the pipe wrench. He hit me with the big hammer, and I break, like, cement blocks on my stomach. I do big stuff, roll a fry pan and things like that. But he's doing, like, the micro stuff, which is very hard to do. And nobody can do it like Bill Kazmaier, all the strongmen, Mark Henry. They couldn't approach what he was doing. So the way he trains me, it's perfect because when you train the hands, I learned that the forearm's going to compensate on the hands, and then the bicep's going to compensate when the hands going to be tired, and the tricep, then the shoulder. So you train the whole body. So it's a crazy kind of workout that works out very well for me. And we're doing a lot of PO, having the rings like the gymnast, and jump over one thing to the other and things like that. And a lot of ISO too, just you hold yourself, or you just like mini reps. It's, you always isolate your muscle, things like that. So it works out good for me. And sometimes I could do like 1,000, you know, like leg press on the buggy, just to get the mind to go over a certain amount of reps that your brain think you can't do it anymore, but you go past that, you know.
So how old is this guy?
60 years old.
How did you meet?
I knew him because what he was doing, as far as he's been doing like old men strong stuff, you know, for 40 years, and he's been banging like a penny and a half on TV shows and things like that. So I crossed him like he was out of his gym or something, and I went. I said, "Would you want to train me, just for my condition and just get me in shape?" And when he said yes, I said, "That's the last strings that owes me to my dream." You know,
right.
That's the last little strings that, if he would have said no, I think no. Like, I tried CrossFit, I tried different type of workout, but they weren't like what I really needed. And I knew at 60 he was a top arm wrestler with the 20 years old. So I knew what he was capable of doing. And I knew he was able to transmit me that. And we were both passionate about what we're doing. And he's done like the Arnold Classic four times the Arnold. The Arnold asked him four times to do an exhibition on Arnold Classic, the bodybuilding show. He did Olympia one time, and he did two movies. And so he's used to the camera and all that, even if he's not brought up in the wrestling world. You know, he's really really camera guy, you know, he knows how to get, you know, his piece in.
What does he do to train these days? If he's around 130 to 235 pounds down from 300, what does his training still consist of? Because I know he's still got to train.
Yeah, he can pass like my training last night, just before I came here, I had like 300 pounds that I had to lift with the tip of my fingers like three times from the ground. And then I would do 100 dips, but real quick. And then we have a power scare things where you go sideways and it gets into your ass, basically, on the side of your ass. And then ab upside down and coming up and maybe a minute full blast Stairmaster, you know, it's all a giant set, frontward, backwards, and then the leg presses and all that. So it's just been working out for me great. And the trainings are about 20, 25 minutes, the length of a match.
And that's it.
Yeah, because he's telling me a muscle that is rested is stronger than a muscle that is tired. So he just found the perfect period of workout, but it's intense though.
I get
you. There's no break.
Yeah.
It's like a match. It's like, you know, if you have a little rest, but it's not a long rest, and then boom, 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 you give it all. And I always finish strong, 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 strong. He always puts the hardest of the workout to the last 3-4 minutes so I can finish strong.
But before you met him throughout your career as you were coming up, were you basically bodybuilding training?
Yeah,
I'm not a bodybuilder, but
we're doing incline, shrugs. Yeah.
Five sets of eight, bench, five sets of eight incline, five sets of eight flies, that's chest.
And then some treadmill, but,
bodybuilding training.
Yeah, bodybuilding training.
And, you're trying to go as heavy as you can, but by the time you get out on the road, you're all beat up, you travel from town to town, your weights diminish a little bit, but it's always about trying to keep a pump, trying to keep some tone and look good and keep some blood going so you're healthy.
And I found out that doing the full range motion, you put a lot of tension on your ligaments, on your tendons, and then that's how injury happens. So by doing pyo, doing isolation, you save all your tendons. So it's very smart training to save kind of your body, and we're doing so many things for the balance, working on different balls, doing squat on the balls and things like that. So if I go to the top rope or something like that and I'm there, I can get a good balance. So everything's taken in consideration, and abs, super strong on the abs, because when you do moonsault, the kick of the abs is very important. So everything you do backwards and things like that, there's always a snap of the abs. So that's very important to have strong core. So we're really working on the core too. So it's a very special adapted workout. It's totally different.
So then if this guy went from 300 to 132, from a nutrition standpoint, is he helping you with nutrition as well?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so then what are you eating?
Well, the thing with him is we got a space. He eats 8,000 calories in the morning, good calories.
How many?
8,000.
8,000?
Yeah, he gets up at 3 in the morning, eats all his calories. He's gonna.
How can he eat 8,000 calories in the morning?
Well, there's pancakes, there's all good things
But 8,000?
About, yeah, but he doesn't eat after that.
So he eats one time a day?
Yeah.
But he eats a shit pile in the morning. Okay, so then what are you doing?
And then you got a window where it's a 16 hours. Oh, you start with an 8 hours window where you don't eat. Then
right.
You go to a 12-hour window where you don't eat. And then eventually you try to get a 16 hours where you don't eat. So your body recuperates, the fat transforms the ketone, which into protein, and the protein is used in your body. And so it transforms from fat to protein, and it's totally against what everybody has ever thought about nutrition was. You know, we were brought up 6 meals a day,
yep.
You know, three
eat
small
three
meals,
hours.
Three big meals, tons of protein. We're Tons of protein loads your kidneys of protein. It's like if you have a wash dryer, you know, spinning so fast because there's so protein in it that it can digest everything. So most of the work is done by your kidneys and it's not even going through your stomach.
But basically, then it sounds like if there's just a small period, a window of eating, then it's in essence intermittent fasting.
Yeah, it's almost like...
If you got an 8-hour fast or you eat and then a 12-hour fast or going to a 16-hour fast because you have to have 24 hours,
yeah,
you're basically fasting after you eat.
Yeah.
Are you only eating one meal a day?
No, I'm eating like two meals a day. I'm eating one meal in the morning, a big meal in the morning, and I'm eating like maybe around 11, 12. That's going to be my last meal. So by the time I get to the wrestling show, I'm full of energy. I don't have to go like to the toilet like three or four times because, you know, nerve shit or whatever.
Yep.
And I'm feeling great and I'm not feel like I'm full. I feel like I'm empty and I'm full of energy. That's been working for me. And that's the new tendency in every gym now. That you will hear about that pretty soon. Like it's going to be all over the world.
Keep in mind that while I'm here flapping my gums, there's millions of skilled workers out there, construction workers or utility repairmen who make their living as doers. They keep the lights on, the roads paved, the water flowing. They're the unsung heroes who keep the world moving. In fact, this podcast might not even exist or get to your ears without skilled workers to provide the electricity and bandwidth for your laptops and devices. For all the doers out there, Timberland Pro has the Hypercharge Work Boot, designed for optimal performance and comfort. These boots feature anti-fatigue technology to deliver underfoot comfort for long days on a job site. A composite safety toe powered by Carbon Shield technology. Stable Stride technology to help keep you steady on uneven surfaces. Premium full-grain waterproof leather with a waterproof membrane. And breathable and moisture-wicking lining and antimicrobial treatment for odor control. The Hypercharge Work Boot is a must-have for the hard working doers out there. There are talkers and there are doers. Timberland Pro. Always do, never done. So you're on the road right now. Where are you living? Montreal?
Yeah.
Okay, so you flew all the way down here from Montreal. You're in Los Angeles, California, as we speak. Right now, it's a quarter to 1 o'clock. You got here at 12. Did you eat yet?
Yeah, I ate this morning. Where did you eat? I eat pretty much everything. Like, I can eat, like, two slices of bread.
I mean, did you go, like, IHOP, or did you eat at a hotel, or what?
It could be whatever I want, but the cleaner I eat, the better it is, though. If I can have, like, egg whites and some pancakes.
Yeah, but how are you getting any calories just eating egg whites? I mean, I'm thinking if you're going to get a ton of calories, you got to eat something that's really calorically dense.
There's a lot of micronutrients, like, that are in vegetables that are bringing their calories very up. Like, if you think about all the nuts, you know, cashews.
Oh, yeah, nuts.
All
yeah,
that.
High in fat, a lot of calories.
That's very, very protein intake for your body. And the fat is good, too. If you eat them in the morning, they're great. If you eat them before going to bed, they're not going to be that great. But in the morning, this is one of the best things you can eat.
Okay, so what are you going to eat for dinner?
What's that?
What are you going to eat for dinner?
For dinner, I'm going to have like something like a chicken breast, maybe a spaghetti.
Yeah, but there's no way you're getting enough calories. If he's eating 8,000 in the morning, you're eating two meals, and because I'm such a calorie counter, that can't be over 3,000 calories.
Well,
for you.
Me, I don't really count my calories.
You don't?
Like, he's more like...
Dude, he must have the metabolism of an insane person.
Yeah, we've been on the road. Like, we did StarCast. We had to drove there from Montreal. It was 15 hours to go, 15 hours to come back. We ate, like, 72 eggs whites, and we ate, like, a bunch of muffin that like tasted like cement, you know. There was no taste in it because his mentality is if you take the taste out of the food, you're not going to want to eat anymore. So that's all he is to the extreme. But he eats good food. But, I mean, I would have to come back to you and really tell you what he really puts in his diet in the morning for 8,000 calories. But if you people have... The boys have been talking about him to me because the forearms, here it's only veins all the way to the biceps. It's so ripped. so ripped. And he kept his strength. He still does. He still curls with two fingers, 220 at 138.
You know, but a big part of that is just genetics. You know, I mean, he's a genetically gifted guy. I mean, dude, it's freaking nature. If you're tearing all the stuff that he does, I mean, that's the kind of shit nobody else can do. Here's one for you. Speaking of strongman, did you ever get to meet Danny Hodge?
No.
Okay, Danny Hodge was a shooter from Oklahoma. Like a national champion wrestler, Golden Gloves boxer, or whatever, but he was a badass. But he was known for his grip strength. And back in the day, you know, Jim Ross, everybody knows all these stories. You know, he'd get an apple and just crush it. He would go to the hardware store and he'd just get a pair of pliers and he'd just start breaking them just by squeezing them.
Yeah.
And is.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Same thing?
Yeah, same thing.
Is there a trick to it? Is there a gimmick to it?
It's what people thought, that sarcasm. When they saw him bending that nail, they thought it was a trick to it, but it's just practicing. It's getting the angle. It's the strength, too, because, like, he's always telling me, no, I'm not that strong. I just know the angle, but I see him like he can take the whole stack when he does back. He's all crooked. He's saying I'm pulling fibers from my toes to my calves to my quads, my ass. Everything is getting to my pull-ups. It's not just my lats.
Right.
It's not just my biceps. It's the whole body that works. So is a multi-fiber. Using every fibers of his body to do things. And just to come back on the Frankenstein thing, he had me doing like abs on straps. And then I was lifting my legs. It was in preparation for Walter. And he was hitting me with a fry pan twice. And the third time I picked up the pan and I rolled the pan and I got up on those traps. Where my elbows were hanging there.
Yeah.
And I start walking and he told me, you look like, you walk like Frankenstein. And if ever, like, I'm going later and or you see me from backwards, you know,
yeah.
You look at me walking, you'll say, this guy really walks like Frankenstein. It's really a character that fits me. I walk like that. I got, like, sometimes I'll stumble, you know. It's not, like, something where I'm always square on my feet. So it really fits my personality.
What do you think that after all these years, because of what is Jean-Pierre Lafitte?
Yeah.
The
Quebecers.
All the incarnations, everywhere you've been, after all these years, your work has always been very, very good, right?
But never noticed.
Never
probably
noticed.
Seen as a mechanic an announcer,
yeah,
or something like that.
But then all these years later to come up with this Frankenstein gimmick and then with the work now, I mean, a sensation and everybody's booking you. Everybody wants you. Everybody wants to come see you. And I sit here across from the table and just watch you talk about it. And you're like a kid in a candy store. You're having so much fun. And the haircut almost kind of looks a little bit like Frankenstein.
Everything is... That's all I got left. So, you know, like, the way you look at it, if you look at my eyes or anything, it's like I'm starting to look like Frankenstein.
You are. It's amazing because, you know, I told a guy this story on the Tuesday podcast, so I'll keep it short. I started off as Steve Williams. That was my real name. And then Dutch Mantel gave me Steve Austin. He gave me Stunning Steve Austin. I was a superstar Steve Austin at ECW, and then I was a ringmaster in WWF, and then I came up with a Stone Cold gimmick. So, you know, I was in the business for 7.5 years before I came up with the gimmick that I could, you know, and I wasn't the greatest worker in the world. I could work just like you can work, but I wasn't the greatest in the world. But the gimmick, everything meshed, and I got the push, and all those circumstances I talked about earlier, just like you talked about,
yeah,
happened, and I ended up being able to do what I did. Now, all of a sudden, man, you're going crazy. After all the work that you put in the business, all the dues you paid, I've seen the way you've been in federations for 5 and 6 years, and sometimes 2 years and 3 years. I mean, but you've been all over the place, and then you retired. You were gone.
Yeah, I took a sabbatical in 2010. I was a little bit discouraged because, you know, I felt like 2008, like, you know, I'm back to having tryouts, you know. But I didn't – it's not that I – don't think I'm too good to have a tryout, because I've seen Chris Benoit have like 3 tryouts, never got hired, went to Japan, back to WCW, boom, everything exploded. So it's just to me to show how bad are you going to fight for what you want, you know? It's just an obstacle. It's nothing wrong with it. It's timing wasn't there. You know, stars weren't aligned. It wasn't my time or whatever it was. You know, I don't try to blame on Vince or blame on WWE or blame on creative or blame on John or blame on the click or whatever it was. It wasn't just my time. You know, it was just, I wasn't ready for it. And it wasn't, nothing was happening in that way. And the Quebecer character was way out of what I always wanted to be. The Jean-Pierre Lafitte, that was my idea, but they gave it a twist where it become a cartoonish, which that's not what I wanted to be.
It was.
So I felt like, okay, now I'm kind of not myself, you know? And they always, and even offices say, to have a good gimmick to work, it's got to be part of the guy itself. If it's not the guy itself that works the gimmick, if we put a gimmick on a guy that ain't the gimmick ain't going to work. So that's how I felt the whole time.
Football season is here, and no one covers football like Podcast One Sportsnet. We've got you covered on a daily basis with Dan Patrick, Rich Eisen.
This might be just a walk in the park.
RJ Bell's Dream Preview, and Ross Tucker's Fantasy Feast Podcast.
They're just creating more work for me at this point.
We also have Jim Harbaugh with Attack Each Day and Revenge of the Jocks with Martellus Bennett.
Football is the ultimate soap opera.
So download all of these shows and more each week on PodcastOneSports.com.
All right, everybody, give me to go home, Q. It's time to wrap up his podcast and ride off in the sunset. Before I do that, I want to thank PCO for coming by the crib today and shooting the breeze with me. You'll catch part 2 of PCO on next Thursday's podcast. Make sure you listen to it. We've got some good shit on the second half. Blast to talk to you. Congratulations on all your success and hard work. Hey, man, I've been trying to redesign some merch for my pro wrestling tee stuff. Ain't done it yet, so fuck it. But I do have a damn good beer to talk about. It is Steve Austin's Broken Skull IPA from El Segundo Brewing Company. And you can find Broken Skull IPA at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in California. Or if you're in L.A., stop by the brewery at 140 Main Street. And if you ain't in Cali, as we say here on the streets, you might be shit out of luck. And that's a shame because this is the best damn IPA in the United States of America. And I stand by that fact all day long. Hey, I've been cutting shit up, moving stuff, working on my damn buggies down there at the ranch. I use my knives every single day. I got 2 of them for you if you need one. Well, everybody needs one, and that's the bottom line. Cold Steel Broken Skull Knife, Cold Steel Working Man Knife. You can find them at my new Amazon store because Amazon's got the best price on both knives. Just go to Amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin or go directly to the Cold Steel Knives website and check out all their badass sharp knives. I want to say one more thank you to all the fine sponsors of the Steve Austin Show, especially BetOnline.ag, TrueCar, Geico, ZipRecruiter, and Timberland Pro. That's how I'm able to do this podcast for you twice a week for free. Please support them because they support us. If you need more info on my sponsors, check out the show description to this episode for details. Folks, I am on social media. I'm on Twitter and I'm on Instagram at Steve Austin BSR. Folks, till next time, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com. Make sure to stick around after this podcast to get the latest headlines from the AP News Minute.